Hi, this is Schneider Mike from BelchingMonkey.com, and we are here with the Anderson Valley Brewing Company for the second of our Interbrew series. We've got Trey White, the new president and owner, and we've got Dave Gatlin, director of operations, on the podcast with us today. Hi, guys. How are you?
Just fine. Yourselves?
We can't complain. We've got beautiful weather here in Boston. How's the weather out in Anderson Valley today?
Well, yesterday and the day before, it got to about, 108, 110, but it's a dry heat. But it hasn't rained here since about Memorial Day, so the weather's actually been outstanding, although we're getting to the time of the year where a little bit of moisture would be a good thing for the vegetation and to keep the forest fires in check.
Keep them at bay out there?
But yeah.
They can rage out there, and you guys are affected by that, obviously.
Yes, indeed.
So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, we don't normally go too much into the, you know, the geography when we do these interviews, and we haven't done that many yet, obviously, but because this is the second one. So when I say normally, I mean, nothing's normal right now, but Anderson Valley is a pretty interesting place in Boonville. Boonville in particular is interesting. I mean, Boonville has its own language, Boonling.
Yeah, the valley, in for your listeners, we're about 2.5 hours north of San Francisco, due north, kind of the southern end of Mendocino County, just north of Sonoma County. And the valley was settled during the mid to late 1800s. This valley actually originally was very much a timber source, and it continues to be a significant source of timber. It also originally was one of the first areas in the country that had extensive hops fields, which is part of our heritage in this area, and that's why we have hops growing, for instance, in our front yard here. We're on 30 acres, and we also have a lot of vineyards now in the valley, but some of them are actually going to start growing some hops as well. But the original folks who sell...
What kind of hops are you growing?
We've got some Goldings and we got some Cascades right now.
Amazing.
Cascades are doing
of course,
better.
You got the big stuff going out there, right? I mean, because that's West Coast.
Yep. We got to have some... we're not these wimpy hops kind of guys. But the original inhabitants were largely male and largely involved in the timber industry, and they kind of came up with their own dialect because this was a... It's still relatively isolated up here, but as you can imagine, 150 years ago, it was extremely isolated. In fact, the orientation in terms of transportation was not east toward, you know, inland. It was west toward the coast, and so most of the commerce went via the port. And so without getting into the nitty-gritty details of the Boonling, we'll just say that the words generally have to do with either geography or sex, and... because that's what was on the mind of the gentlemen who were here at the time.
We found a great YouTube video on Boonling that we're going to link up below this podcast on the site so that people can get a little bit of a flavor for it. But, you know, I think Boonling is burlapping awesome, if I can say that. I don't know if I can use it that way. But, I mean, like you said, it's about, you know, location, local-based things or sex. There's a lot of interesting terms that they put in there. And, you know, it's just so other people, I guess the genesis of it was they just didn't want other people to know what they were talking about.
Yeah, I think that my understanding is as we got, you know, well into the 1900s or the 20th century when, you know, with modern communication it became less isolated, they just, the folks around here maintained it for that very reason, so that they could be relatively unique and mess with the outsiders as they came into the valley.
So Trey, you're the new president and owner. You told me you've owned you've owned the brewery for 5 months now. Congratulations, awesome purchase. I think Anderson Valley Brewing Company is one of my favorites. You've got what I think is in my mind. I've had a lot of amber ales. It's number one or number two in the Boont Amber. You know, what was it that inspired you to purchase the brewery?
Well, I'd been involved in the beer business for 10 or 12 years previously with a sales and marketing company, and so I had extensive experience throughout the United States dealing with customers, both retail and distributor level, and I had a lot of experience developing a relationship with craft brewers across the United States, and ultimately, on a personal level, I came to the conclusion that I would like to, for better or worse, actually own a brewery. And this particular brewery I had become aware of through some of my contacts within the industry. The former owner, Ken Allen, was truly a pioneer. He literally started right at the same time as guys like Ken Grossman at Sierra Nevada. And, you know, when Fritz Maytag down at Ankerstein was getting going, you know, we're talking about the late 80s here. And he successfully established Anderson. You know, he had a very specific and relatively simple core philosophy, which was to make the best possible beers that humanly could be done. And he stayed true to that philosophy throughout his ownership and stewardship of the brand. And when I became aware, you know, he was getting, you know, to the point in his life, you know, where he was at retirement age and a little bit older than some who retire. And so he needed to have a, you know, basically a way to transition the business. You know, his family was not going to want to get into the business, so it needed to be an outsider. And so, frankly, when you're looking at it buying into the business, you know, it's challenging to find a brand now like this that has the credentials and the authenticity and the integrity that Anderson Valley brings to the table. Yet, on the other hand, I felt like it was a great matchup with my background in sales and marketing because the brand, while it's a pioneer, has not been as aggressive in terms of becoming more widely available throughout the United States and doing some of the things that some of the other breweries like us here in Nevada, for instance, have done in order to become larger facilities. Now, I was very conscious of retaining and maintaining and ultimately enhancing that quality that Ken Allen had imbued into the brands, and that's why I've retained all of the current brewing staff, including Dave Gallen, and we're actually bringing in a gentleman named Fal Allen, who's no relation to Ken, who was a former brewmaster with Anderson Valley, but had left about 5 years ago, and Fal is an extremely well-regarded and respected brewmaster, and he'll be rejoining the company here in a couple of weeks to really continue that process of maintaining and enhancing Anderson Valley's reputation as one of the premier beers in the United States and in the world, because as you know, the American craft beers are starting to gain a reputation not only here in the United States, but throughout the world, in particular in Europe and in Asia. And I
really, Japan is huge on them right now. They can't get enough of some of these beers.
Yep. Yeah, I think in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see American craft beers being exported in far larger quantities than we've seen to date.
So I'm curious to know the size of the brewery, like how many barrels you do, but I'm also curious about how a brewery that is as environmentally conscious as yours, I mean, you guys brew with solar power. It's my understanding that you got a photovoltaic array, whatever that is, and harnessing solar power, and you're doing most of your brewing using solar power, which is amazing. And you have your own wastewater treatment plant, you're growing mushrooms for cattle feed, doing other things that are socially responsible. How do you continue to do things like that and also scale?
Well, part of it's our location. You know, as I was saying earlier, you know, we haven't really had any rain here for about 3 or 4 months, and it's sunny pretty much every day. And I mean, and we're talking cloudless sun here. So we've got a lot of energy when it comes potential in terms of the solar arrays go. And with the wastewater, the way we scale it up is previously and currently, we've had a aerobic system, which is basically ponds for the treatment. But we are literally, as we speak, starting up an anaerobic system. It's a pilot system created by a company named Real Green that will vastly increase our on-site wastewater treatment. It's an aerobic system that utilizes microbes and enzymes to essentially digest. It's a biodigester. It digests the effluent from the wastewater, and it actually throws off methane as one of the byproducts, which is something that we can capture and reuse as well. So to answer your question in terms of how we scale up by increasing the sophistication of our wastewater treatment, and that will enable us to greatly increase our throughput from a water standpoint, as well as conserve the water, because now with this new system, while we're not going to reuse the water for making beer, obviously, the water will be of sufficient cleanness to be used for cleaning and other non-production or direct production processes. And the other thing we have going for us is we just have a lot of space out here, and so that enables us ultimately to expand our solar array as well as the wastewater, and things like creating the fertilizer for the cattle and so forth. That's just more of a byproduct. So that's how you do it and stay green. There's lots of ways to do it, actually.
That's amazing. Did you answer the barrels question?
30,000 barrels.
30,000 barrels. That's not small. We talk 31 gallons a barrel.
Yeah, that correct, and that's it's the equivalent of roughly 400,000 cases.
Wow. I'd like to swim in that. Do you guys? I'm so fascinated by what's going on over there. Do you guys do you have a brewery tour? Do you do tours?
Yeah, we actually have a very nice. We're on the way to the Mendocino coast, and so here in the valley, you have our brewery, but you also have a lot of very good wineries, in particular Pinot Noir wineries, and so we get a lot of tourist traffic through here, basically, and we have a very nice visitor center that functions essentially as a bar. And so people are able to come here and taste and enjoy our beers, get a sense for the valley. As I talked about before, it's 30 acres. We've got some pygmy goats in the front part, kind of intermingling with our hops field. And we also have a disc golf course, a full disc golf course here on the ground. So we have a lot of disc golfers that come in and visit us. And then the folks interested in the brewery tours, yes, we provide those on a daily basis as well.
All right, let's talk about beer. I mean, we've been talking about beer, but let's talk about your beer. So the first thing I want to do is thank you for basically turning me around on cans. I went to a place called Marty's Liquors, which carries a wide array of your products, and they had a sale on Anderson Valley Boone to Amber, and it was in cans, and I was like, I don't know if I can drink that, and because I was a big can snob, I didn't want to drink anything out of cans, including Oscar Blues, which is basically only found in cans. So I had this big misconception that cans were bad, but I can't get enough of Boone's Amber now. In fact, it's either my first or second favorite amber ale. The other one being, I don't know if you've had this one before, but it's the Great Lakes Brewing Company's Elliott Ness. I think it's right on par with that. And they're both just amazingly fantastic beers. What is with the whole American misconception that cans are bad?
Well, years ago, and we're talking many years, arguably a couple of decades ago, there were some issues with the interaction between the beer and the metal in cans. And understand, can technology, though, has evolved immensely over the past 100 years. But about 15 or 20 years ago, the can manufacturers started putting linings in their cans that really eliminated any kind of interaction between the liquid and the metal. And that means now, if you think about the beer and understand that there are two things that make, or two things that primarily create skunky beer. One is light stroke. That's why beer is in brown bottles as opposed to clear bottles usually. Obviously, there's a couple of brands that like to be in clear bottles, but most beers are in brown bottles because that minimizes the impact of the harmful light rays. In a can, you don't have that issue. You're completely dark. And secondly, the amount of oxygen that's left in the container, be it a glass container or a can container, is relatively lower in a can container than a glass container. There's always that space at the top of a bottle that you can see in the neck.
So in theory, the beer in a can would be better?
In theory. Now, that said...
Given new can technology.
Yep. But there's still a lot of folks who don't, like yourself, for instance, who haven't experienced it personally yet. And so we as an industry are still kind of overcoming that stigma attached with the cans.
I'm here to say, you know, go nuts, drink beer out of cans. I've had plenty of beers in cans now. In fact, I went on a streak for a while where I wanted to try everything in cans just to see if it was just yours or if it was everybody's. And I found that, you know, a lot of beers just were better in cans, and it was a pretty good experience. So let's talk a little bit about you know, your beers and the names of your beers. For instance, are these Bootling names throughout here?
Yeah, I think really all the beers currently have some sort of Bootling moniker, if you will. You know, Boont is the Bootling name for the town of Boonville, which is where we're located. Palico, which is our pale ale, is the Bootling name for the town down the road here called Philo. And then we've got...
What's Barney Flats?
Barney Flats is one of the mountains here in the...
It's actually the state park here.
Oh, sorry, state park. Yep.
Indy Woods. It has original old-growth redwoods. It's very beautiful, very pristine, the way the valley once was.
Yep. And Hopbotten is...
Hard-working hops. So the hops are hard at work in that one, and there's a lot of them in there.
So that's the India. That's the IPA, so that's Hopbotten, and the Barney Flats is your oatmeal stout.
Right.
And then you've got, what about Deep Enders, Dark Porter, and your High Rollers wheat beer?
Those are the two opposite ends of the valley. The High Rollers is considered the highlands. It's where Yorkville is, and... The Deep Enders Dark Porter represents the Navarro end, heading north towards the ocean. The redwood trees close in on the highway there, and so that represents the deep end of the valley. The water obviously flows north to the ocean, so that's the deep end.
So you've got what I think is a pretty good selection here. You've got an amber, an IPA, an oatmeal stout, you know, pale, an ESB, a porter, and a wheat beer. And then you've got a couple of seasonals, the summer solstice cerveza crema, which is like an orange cream. It's delicious. I think we did a review of it. And an anecdote, I use it for making beer can chicken, and it's phenomenal when you use that beer. And then I also you have the winter solstice seasonal ale as well. What do you think? You know, what's distinct about Anderson Valley beers? What is it that makes Anderson Valley kind of stand out from the rest of the craft crowd?
I'll let Dave add his two cents on this, but I would say at the highest level and simplest level is it's staying true to the concept of balance. You know, a lot, especially these days, a lot of folks end up with these super hopped up beers, and particularly the IPAs and even some of the other ones. We have, and Ken Allen, I say we, but it's really been Ken Allen and Dave Gallen and the folks, have really strived to maintain that balance, not only with the hops, but also with the malt character of the beers. And that's why, you know, our flagship, the Boone Amber, relatively speaking, is a little bit less hoppy and a little bit more malty. Even the Hopbotten IPA, which, while it certainly has a lot of hops, it also has a malt character that you don't necessarily find in all the mainstream IPAs these days. I don't know if Dave has anything else he'd want to add on that front.
I would totally agree with that, and I think commitment to quality would stand out right at the top there. You know, that was something that Ken always believed in, make the best beer in the world, was what he strived to do. And so I think, you know, that commitment, along with the balance of our products, has really helped.
All right, well, as someone who drinks your beers and as someone who loves your product, I think it's you know, the balance is key. Nothing is too huge with you guys, and so there, that's excellent. So balance is excellent, but there's also little subtleties inside the beers that just, you know, and little surprises. And every time you drink it, the first time you drink it, you get that feeling that it's balanced and it's just a good quality beer. But then if you, you know, actually sit down and appreciate it, you smell it, you look at the color's fantastic. The, you know, just the way that it carries itself is beautiful. And then also, just again, these little secrets that you can unlock if you drink enough of it are fantastic. And as it, you know, if you drink it at different temperatures, you can unlock different things too. And I actually recommend when you review it to drink it, not room temperature, but don't drink it ice cold. You know, have it at maybe, you know, I don't know, 55 degrees around there, just so that you get a chance to really see what's happening in the beer, and you're not just overwhelmed by cold, and definitely don't drink it in a frosty glass.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, that could be said for most good American craft beers. You know, this
certainly
Americans became conditioned to having their beer served to them and almost as cold as it possibly could be, because, you know, it was a different style of beer where it was mainly for cold refreshment as opposed to subtle flavors. And the American craft industry, I think, is now creating products, and hopefully ourselves among them, obviously, that do have that complexity and subtlety that actually is harmed to a certain degree once you get past the particular, you know, you make it too cold. And like you said, you don't want it to be room temperature, but you want it to be at the right temperature, which is something between ice cold and room temperature, depending on the particular beer and the occasion and so forth.
If you can't have Anderson Valley, what else kind of charges you up? What, both of you, this is a question for both of you.
Dave, I'll start with them.
I got to say, a small brewery nearby here, Russian River, I really like what Vinny's doing. He's got some great barrel-aged beers. I really enjoy his sour beers. And I'd have to say that's probably my favorite beer to drink besides ours.
Yeah. I'd have to agree with you.
Yeah, now Vinny and Natalie there have a, you know, tremendous quality reputation, well-deserved, and, you know, they receive tremendous accolades, all of them legitimate. Personally, you know, it's, as far as beers, you know, every day, kind of up and down the street beers that I enjoy, certainly, you know, one of the classics is Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
I've been drinking that for a very long time, and it's still a very, very good beer. And, you know, something out of the Chicago area, I've always thought highly of Goose Island. And, you know, something like Conker's Ale, which is, again, a very sessionable beer, not the big, you know, And don't get me wrong, I'm one of those guys that likes, I'm not a lager guy, I like the hoppy stuff. But as far as an up and down the street everyday beer, a Honker's Ale is very good.
I'm from the Midwest, and I've had more than my fair share of Honker's Ale, my friend. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it is a very sessionable beer, and it's a, you know, it's a good quality beer. There's nothing big about it, but it's, you know, it's, if you want to kick a few back, that's a good quality beer. I mean, the Sierra Nevada for you is, that's Sam Adams for me, basically. It's the beer that got me kind of into craft beer, and it's the kind of thing that I just have a special spot in my heart for it. It's not my favorite, but it's, you know, I enjoy it.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's almost more sentimental than, you know, just pure nature of the beer. But
We've seen Russian River. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Oh, okay. So we've seen Russian River do a collaboration with Avery. Any plans for a collaboration with those guys, perhaps? Or
yeah, you know, the collaboration is certainly a big trend in the industry. It's something that we're certainly thinking about. It's you know, frankly, it's a matter of finding the right partners and sorting out, you know, exactly what the purpose and the goal is going to be. You know, Frankly, I don't want to do a collaboration just to be saying we're doing a collaboration. I want it to have a real, real purpose.
Yeah, it should be good beer, right? Good product.
That's, and I've got some ideas in the back of my mind, but they're not to the point where, you know, it makes sense to talk about them yet. But yeah, I think at some point in the future, we'll get involved in the collaborations, but we'll try to do it with some fresh twists, shall we say.
When they do, be sure to let us know so that we can be there ready for the first pour.
Yeah, one thing on that, you kind of alluded to new products, because this is we took over the brewery 5 months ago, and as you can imagine, there's a lead time to getting new initiatives executed, and so now we're literally just launching some of our new initiatives. And the big one is, speaking of Bootling, it's going to be called the Ballhornin Draft Series. Ballhornin meaning good drinking in Bootling. And you know, one of the things the brewery's done over the years is occasionally the brewers would come up with something special that, you know, maybe they'd create 10 or 20 kegs, and maybe, you know, a handful of accounts here locally could get their hands on them, or we'd serve them in the visitor center. But we wanted to really harness that a little bit more systematically, if you will. And so starting next month, we're going to launch our first entry in the Ballhornin series. It's going to be an Imperial Boone Amber. And, you know, every 60 days, the brewery is going to come out with a new special draft product. And we're actually going to have them there in Boston, because our distributor out there is bring in some of the kegs. But I did want to mention that.
Wait, did you just say that Imperial Boont Amber is going to be available in Boston?
On a limited basis, yes. I believe, you know, we're talking 20, 30 kegs. So I don't know exactly where it's going, but it's
I might drink three of them.
Okay, well,
myself.
it's Imperial, so it's a little bit bigger than the standard Boont. So yeah, it'll be a richer flavor, but we're very excited about it. It's been very well received when we've tasted some folks on it, and we've got our very first kickoff here on the West Coast next week.
I can't wait to try an Imperial Boont. Oh my God, that's gonna be crazy good. That's something to look forward to. Thanks for letting us know about that. When did you say we could expect to see it?
Well, we'll see it out. Folks will see it out here in California here in the next couple of 3 weeks. To be honest, I'd have to go look into our order book to see exactly when the folks in Massachusetts are bringing it up. At some point in the next 30 to 45 days, for sure.
Awesome. I'm going to keep my bananas peeled for that one. So you talked a little bit about roadmap. That's amazing. Where can we find you in general? I mean, you mentioned, you know, we know we can get you out here on the East Coast in Boston. I'm sure throughout California. Are you very widely distributed?
Yeah.
Throughout the United States, or?
That's one of the things we're working on. You know, 80%+ of the business was here on the West Coast, you know, as of April 1. One of the things that I've been doing, given some of my contacts and relationships across the country, is trying to, you know, in a rational and planned way, expand our distribution. You know, the Northeast happens to be the area where we have some of the, you know, other than Massachusetts, you know, we're not in, you know, New Hampshire and Vermont and Maine and Connecticut, for instance. But folks can expect to see Anderson Valley become more and more widely available over the next year or two, for sure. You know, getting back to your original point about capacity, the last thing I want to do with this brewery is grow it too quickly. On the other hand, you know, we do have the ability to grow it, you know, at a rational pace. Rational pace to me is 15 or 20% a year. Which will enable us to, you know, gradually expand into some additional markets throughout the United States, or even, you know, frankly, in a place like Boston, where we've had some distribution, expand the distribution there in Massachusetts beyond, you know, just a handful of accounts and so forth.
I'm glad to hear the stewards of one of my favorite beers are planning to, you know, do things rationally. It's always good to hear.
Yeah. It's always a tricky part. You know, I think human nature is to grow really quickly a lot of times, but having been in the business for a while and seeing what happens when folks try to grow too quickly, you know, in addition to really potentially hurting the quality of the product, you know, you start taking a lot of risks, business risks that I think are not necessary. And at the same time, when you're growing, you know, at that rational pace, you're able to really fund a lot of fun things like the Ballhornin and Draft Series, and like, you know, some of the other things that, you know, we're not even talking about yet because we're not ready to talk about them. But it should be very fun. Certainly, for the folks here at the brewery. You know, guys like Dave, I think, have been challenged this summer in terms of, you know, kind of having the opportunity to try some new things, because I think there's a lot of creativity here with the folks at the brewery, because there's a lot of experience in terms of the guys and gals here at the brewery in terms of brewing great beers, and I just want to unleash that in a rational way, because that's what's fun for everybody.
That's really fun and important. I mean, in any company, if you take the ability to do research or, you know, basically have some fun or allow people to kind of grow themselves, through experimentation, I think, you know, that just kind of sucks the lifeblood out of the way that these companies were formed in the first place. I remember, you know, I'm a software guy first and foremost, and one of, you know, the smaller companies that I worked for, we had a bunch of, quote, skunk works projects that we worked in that we just did for fun, but they really pushed us too. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that you guys have that sort of spirit. To be frank, it's what I expected from you. Guys, it's been really fun to have you on the Belching Monkey Show on the Interbrew series, Trey and Dave. Thanks so much for your time. I just wanted to ask if you had a question for the audience that we could wrap up with here.
I guess my question would be, what are they wanting to see kind of the next generation of craft breweries, you know, stylistically or packaging? You know, what do they hope to, if a consumer sitting here today in 2010, what are their dreams and vision to be seeing, say, in 2012 or even 2015? Because as we all know, the craft beer industry today is vastly different than the industry even 5 years ago. And I'm always curious to see what consumers are dreaming to see in the future. You know, is it more collaborations? Is it more sour beer? What is it?
Amazing. All right, thanks, everybody. This has been Belching Monkey Interbrew Series, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.